a pleasure to welcome Chris Blasi, president of Neptune Global Holdings, today on his debut appearance. Welcome, Chris Blasi.
Thank you, Chris. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Let's start off with a brief overview of your background and interesting experience.
I had a lot of extensive experience in both the financial world and technology. I was with one of the major broker-dealers for a number of years, and then I worked with a boutique M&A firm that did merchant banking and mergers and acquisition. And then I spent a little over a decade with one of the major technology firms.
Why don't we begin today with the precious metals market? Investors, of course, becoming much more interested in the sector now that the greenback has slid below support levels over the past several years. People are turning to the safe haven of gold and silver in particular.
I think the most important thing is really the big picture. I mean, precious metals are driven by what's going on macroeconomically. Don't really invest in them for the very short term, right? The physical precious metals, which is what we specialize in. I know everyone gets caught up in the day-to-day, you know, what's the news of the day, but really precious metals, the view that needs to be taken is big picture. And that big picture, from the way we see it, is in 2001, gold bottomed at $255 an ounce and entered into a secular bull market. And secular bull markets tend to run 20 to 25 years in duration. And the pattern so far has been a textbook pattern. So as much negativity as there is about precious metals, I think if you step back and look, it's actually unfolding, as I said, in a textbook way. And just real quickly, there's basically three legs to a secular bull market. The first one up, the second is a pullback and multi-year cyclical bear, where there's a major retracement in the price. And then the third leg is the biggest and offers the greatest returns. And that first leg was basically completed in 2012. That pullback intermediate cyclical bear ran until December of 2015. Since the beginning of 2016 until now, it is basically grinding higher in what we believe is the third leg.
It reminds one a bit of Elliott Wave analysis. However, there will be the listener today who might point to the 1970s when we talk about a 20 to 25-year bull market. Can you help them to understand how what we saw from, let's say, 2001 to 2011 or 2012, that 10 to 12-year period may not just represent a parallel with the 1970s, that it might double in its length this time?
Sure. So the 1970s, as far as peak price, of course, we've already exceeded that, which was 800 an ounce in 1980. From when gold peaked in 1980 until 2001, that was a secular bear market, which is really just the reverse of the cyclical bull. And that was a 21-year run, fit the pattern, peaking gold at 800 in 1980, did a first leg down. Then there was a multi-year rally, right, the reverse, because it was a cyclical bear, and then it continued to plunge until it bottomed in 2001. In the 1970s, of course, we know gold had the big run. Nixon takes us off the gold standard officially in the beginning of that decade, and then gold ran. And, you know, we had great inflation, and then we know Paul Volcker broke inflation, and therefore then gold went in its bear market. But comparing the 1970s until now, and really, you know, why we believe the upside for gold far exceeds the 1970s. In the 1970s, the basic structure, the financial structure of the United States, its institutions were far more sound than they are now. The nation was far more aligned and cohesive back then. Now we have basically bankrupt institutions top to bottom, everything from pension funds to the national debt. And culturally, we have a nation that's fraying at the seams. And for anyone who may think that a country can fall apart culturally and socially, but still maintain a healthy economic system, that's just not possible. The whole foundation of the country right now, as compared to the 1970s, is completely different, with it being much more precarious now. And therefore, to your earlier point, the upside potential for gold and the precious metals is far greater now.
You know, it's interesting you'd bring up the cultural aspects of the current national dilemma. You know, just a basic tome like Fiat Money, Inflation in France, Dixon White, as a reminder of some of the signs, some of the red flags that accompany almost the destruction of a republic. We're seeing so many of those signs. Gambling, as people find it virtually impossible to earn a living wage. It was first in the periphery. Now it's starting to come to the fore. Guaranteed income, not just in North America, but around the globe. And maybe emblematic of this world that I think you alluded to. Give us an idea of how gold and precious metals might help us insulate ourselves from that type of environment.
Well, Chris, you know, those are great points. And so what's gold? What's its position in the world that we're in right now? And I think we're going into a, you know, kind of a meat grinder, right? And, you know, when you talk about like things like ideas like guaranteed income, that's just, you know, hyper-socialism, which is if socialism fails, hyper-socialism will fail to an order of magnitude greater. And I think for those of us who can see this coming and aren't delusional and don't believe that, you know, the Fed can sit and play with their little dials and manage things, you go into a safe haven, like gold, in the physical form, right? Participating in a Wall Street-created derivative or paper version is not going to serve you. And basically, it's like you're going through a storm, right? And then you want to come out the other end financially intact, or at least in a far better position than the next person. And therefore, you have then the capital and the resources to rebuild and basically take care of yourself and those who are dependent on you. You know, it's not like holding gold will make it painless, because as a society deteriorates and falls, it's going to be very uncomfortable. It's not going to be pleasant. Gold is not a cure for that, or you're not going to avoid it, but it's so you can hopefully come out more intact than the masses.
Exactly. I was one of our guests was fond of saying crystallizing your wealth so that once the storm passes, you can rebuild. You know, you've written extensively on the risk of 401k that so many folks are pinning their hopes on. Trillions now are invested here in the United States, $3 to $4 trillion in just Tokyo alone. So in the Western world, pension funds are a huge question mark. You seem to think, and others have also made this point on this show, that perhaps desperate policymakers might just reach into that coffer. Give us an idea of how there might be contingencies to protect ourselves.
So that's a, you know, great point. And, you know, that's a speculation, but I think it's fairly well thought out. So if, you know, your listeners think about it, right, we have, what, hundreds and hundreds of billions, if not trillions, of pensions that are totally unfunded. Does the federal government turn around and just tell all those tens of millions of voters, you know what, that's your loss, right? You're going to take your big haircut. Or are they going to ride to the rescue? And part of riding to the rescue, of course, will be more debt. But there's also that big pile of money in 401ks. And, you know, when things are failing and they're desperate, they're going to grab anything they can get their hands on. And the 401k, of course, is it's all recorded and easy to track and all ready to lock down. So I think that's a, you know, it's a huge risk. And the person really has to evaluate what that risk is and what's best for themselves. I think it's going to be too tempting a target that's not going to be grabbed. And they're basically probably going to be told something along the line is going to be blended in with almost like a national pension system. And, of course, that will limit what their access is and even what the assets are going to be within it. And I know a number of investors that are taking action in anticipation of that.
Moving on to the U.S. equities markets, many advisors and pundits were caught off guard, most of us, in fact, by this enormous rally stemming from 2009, regularly seeing new weekly highs in the Dow Jones, 120-year records. There are still the few lone bearish holdouts who claim that we will see a return to the mean and that valuations on price-to-earnings ratios simply don't reflect corporate earnings. Your thoughts, please.
Well, Chris, you're right. I mean, it defies all the fundamentals, and it has for years. And calling, you know, when it's going to pull back or collapse is really impossible. I mean, it should. I think maybe when the last bear finally gives in, you know, that's when it's going to happen. I also believe it's not that difficult for, we'll call it, the powers to be, and I think your listeners know what we mean by that, to manipulate that market, right? Following, you know, there are just a handful of stocks that are really making these highs. The broader market is far weaker. So there's a lot of, you know, statistical gains that are part of showing the robust moves in the stock market. If you've sat out the last few years, yes, you've lost out on that upside. You know, I can't make the call. I think at some point it's really got to give back a lot of these gains for the last, made in the last 5 years. Not quite sure when that's going to happen, but I am in the kind of the bearish camp over the next 5 years or 3 to 5 years for the stock market.
No, exactly. And one would certainly expect the gains to be overshadowed by the potential for risk. Can you give us your outlook on the precious metals sector? Perhaps you might like to discuss the shares or the XAU and HUI indexes.
Gold has entered what we see as the third leg of this bull market. You know, of course, it's two steps forward, one back. They tend to get precious metals, you know, gold and silver tend to get hit at times when, you know, the enthusiasm just starts to build. But if you look back and realize that, no, it's grinding higher, right? We are now, 2016 was an up year. 2017 is going to be, it should be another up year, and not lose sight of that and just kind of hold your ground. I think one of the biggest risks when the next financial event comes, you know, that's going to be an order of magnitude greater than 2008. I think it's going to come very swift. It's not going to give everyone a warning and a heads up and allow them a lot of time to prepare. Like any event that comes out of left field, it's going to come. You just don't know when. You need to be prepared ahead of time. Waiting till after the event to then get your affairs in order, meaning establishing a position in, stored wealth, will be too late. Either it will not be available or it'll be available at a much, much higher price. Like I said, we're going to go into a meat grinder. I think when people look back, we're already in it. You know, everyone's kind of waiting for something that's maybe more dramatic to say that the system is imploding. But I think when the history books look back, the date will be prior to today. And I think we're in the slow motion collapse. And there's just a lot of effort to paper it over and make it look like it's not happening. But I think it's happening.
For many years, we've all wondered when the huge inflation question mark would come into play in these financial markets. You know, what was the source really absorbing this excess money supply? And, you know, now we're starting to look at this $150 to $170 billion cryptocurrency market, which obviously is sopping up an enormous amount of funds and on track, if estimates are correct, to maybe even rival the Forex $5 trillion market. Once things really start to unravel at the seams, even though cryptos are the trend, a huge theme, and will be probably for many years, eventually there will be almost no place to hide other than the precious metals. Any quick thoughts there?
Chris, you brought up a huge topic, right? Cryptocurrency. I mean, that is a subject that we could spend hours on. I think on a high level, it's a wide open field right now. And it's the hot topic, and if you bring it up, you're going to get a lot of listeners. I also think there's some misperceptions, and I think there's also a degree of being a little too optimistic as far as their anonymity goes and their being outside of the system. You know, having been in big tech for a long time, if your wealth is going to be relegated to an electronic blip that exists solely in cyberspace, there's risks to that I think people think don't exist. And they really feel that it can function completely outside of the control or tracking of the powers that be. And all because maybe these systems, you know, these cryptocurrencies can't be hacked by a local hacker. You know, when you talk about the compute power of a nation state or such, that's quite different, and their ability to track and see what's going on. So it's a hot market, we both know, and you know that every effort will be made by the nation states. If the money's tied up there to go after it, we see already with what's coming out of China, with the threats against the exchanges. And, you know, we even know that there's regulations and directives coming out of the SEC and the IRS about cryptocurrencies and tax consequences and ramifications and such. So it's a big market, but I think you need to be, cognizant that you're probably not going to have this untouchable level of anonymity that maybe I think many think exists with cryptocurrency.
I think it's a good point. I mean, I'm a bit ambivalent here. On the one hand, we see an incredible revolution underway that is going to decentralize so much and disrupt much of the existing hegemony within our local and federal economies. But on the other, you are right. I mean, the advent now of quantum computing and qubits really rattles the whole foundation of anonymity, because the powers that be, the NSA, among many others, do have access to this quantum computing, which is a sea change in the ability to crack encryption.
Unfortunately, you know, if you kind of even look at things kind of sober, you know, there are the zealots who will attack you, right, and say you don't understand the internet. And actually, I think it's the reverse. No, I do understand the internet, and there isn't this level of anonymity, right? I mean, it's a digital highway, and the highway travels down backbones, and those backbones are controlled by the nation states.
But let's not forget that the NSA, there's considerable evidence that at least at the federal level, the entire backbone of all internet traffic is likely being sifted. So the thought that anything is fully anonymous through something like a Tor browser, it's just the past. So I think you make a great point. And you are right. I mean, this is a topic for another discussion, because I think we obviously both are fascinated, so many of us, by what's going on here in the crypto domain. Because it obviously is the future, but I think just like the internet circa maybe 92, 93, what is that future? It's evolving quickly.
And Chris, to your point, I agree 100% that the whole idea on paper, what the cryptocurrencies represent and what their potentials are, is awesome, because what it could bring is true free markets back, right? We know there are no free markets anymore, right? Everything is manipulated. When the fact that the Fed sits around and everyone, you know, rates are determined by them is just, you know, there's no free market. There isn't a free market anything. And the cryptocurrencies basically said, you know, we can offer you a path to the free market, but that's not going to come without a war. Those that will lose power if cryptocurrencies were to develop and come to reach their potential unencumbered have too much to lose. So be skeptical, meaning I just be sober-minded about them and not be naive. And the one thing I will say is, you know, you've probably heard this comment, you know, is Bitcoin, you know, as the representative will say for cryptocurrencies, the new gold. And it's not at all. And it's not saying that Bitcoin is bad. That's not my point. But their only similarity is that they're considered out of the mainstream. But one is tangible and has survived financial crises for 5,000 years. And the other is digital, exists as an electronic blip, basically has only been around for an extremely short period.
I prefer the idea that what Bitcoin really represents is a quantum leap in fiat money. Now, whether that's good or bad, again, we get into that gray area. As a sound money enthusiast, probably like yourself, that raises a lot of alarms. But just like any other Ponzi scheme, which I would argue all financial markets are Ponzi schemes that are unbacked, there's opportunity cost associated with ignoring the potential energy there. And that's what's been unleashed here. In fact, I believe that our policymakers are only just beginning to wake up to this sea change event that the cryptos represent. For instance, it's really a blockchain revolution. As you know, triple entry accounting, that is a great revolution that could eliminate maybe 80, 90% of government waste, corporate waste, voter fraud, so many aspects of our lives. It actually allows the value creation at an individual personal level all the way up and down, you know, the corporate hierarchy through government. I mean, it's going to change and decentralize and disrupt all technologies, but there will be a Herculean fight against this. And we don't want, I think, and neither do you want your clients to get caught up in the middle of that battle, that struggle. And I echo your sentiments that the cryptos do not represent digital gold, but I would argue that it's just digital paper money, and it threatens, you know, the hegemony of our reserve status as well as all global fiat money. And just how that plays out, I think that's another discussion for another show. Parting comments for our listeners today.
I'd love to take up the topic again, because there's so much more we could talk about, especially with the blockchain, because, you know, I'll just leave by saying, yeah, I believe the underlying platform, you know, blockchain is revolutionary and and if deployed and used to the best, you know, for the best interest of the masses, it can be a wonderful thing. But there will be a big fight. Precious metals are not out of the picture at all. And I think that, you know, it's just like basic reverse psychology. If they continue to be denigrated and downplayed by, you know, those who benefit from a fiat monetary system and the debt, then, you know, that means it's the right thing to probably have a position in.
Sure, diversify. Nothing wrong with building a core position as long as one has a solid portfolio base of the yellow metal and AG. And I'd just add a couple of quick anecdotes or provisos. Firstly, there is an interesting, entirely anonymous alternative to Bitcoin called Komodo. KMD is the ticker. This is an up-and-coming company. I will have to, for transparency's sake, it's up, I don't know, how many thousand percent like so many of the cryptos. This offers some interesting anonymity to the everyday transaction or the enormous corporate size transaction. Also, I'd point out that 1 gram is being brought public by Smith Crown, which is the top-notch, the premier listing in the ICO space. But 1 gram actually has a gram, or claims to hold 1 gram of gold per token. So this is maybe a way to transition into a more sound, money-backed electronic or digital currency. Chris Blasi, please tell people more about the interesting things they'll find at your website.
Chris, I think one of the greatest things that we offer is something called the PMC ounce, the precious metals composite. And I would say it is revolutionary in the sense that it took the best of two worlds, the ease of trade of, you know, what people have with what they feel with an ETF or something, but with actual physical precious metals in a storage account that's fully allocated and assigned in the client's name. And the bottom line is, we are a full-service precious metals dealer, right? We deal in all the traditional bars and coins. But the PMC ounce is a turnkey diversified portfolio that trades, you know, each ounce order sold is an instantaneous precious metals diversified portfolio with a logically weighted position in gold, silver, platinum, and palladium. I mean, there's so much to talk about the benefits of it. You know, most of it can be seen on our website. We have a number of tools and graphs. The purpose of it isn't to beat the market. It's not a managed fund, but it's a logically weighted portfolio that the blended return that the PMC ounce offers and basically has demonstrated since its inception in 2008 means a blended return that mitigates and lessens the volatility that someone experiences if they're in just one or two of the metals. And I'm happy to say that we've been recognized by some well-known analysts for financial analysts and precious metals experts who have followed it for several years and have actually been recommending it quite aggressively as probably as the most logical way to run a precious metals portfolio. So, you know, I'd encourage people to visit NeptuneGlobal.com. Just to learn about it. We're here to answer any questions and assist anyone in getting a better understanding of how it could help them.
Chris Blasi, we'll look forward to having you back if you have time in 2017 on Gold Seek Radio.
Thanks, Chris. It was great talking with you, and I appreciate your audience's time and attention.
With stocks hitting new highs, the next sector to fly could be the precious metals. GoldSeek's top industry analyst just uncovered another solid gold opportunity, Silvercorp Metals. Silvercorp's key property is located in China, the largest gold producer in the world. Silvercorp's net income is soaring, up 589%. Production eclipsed guidance by 27.5%. totaling 6.5 million ounces. Mining operations are literally printing silver at only $3.82 per ounce. AISC net byproducts credits for the fiscal year 2017. Sales increased 51% year over year, and cash flow from operations more than doubled to $80 million. Silvercorp continues to set the industry standard with reduced costs, equity appreciation, a solid dividend, and improved free cash flow. Silvercorp is uniquely positioned to capitalize on rising silver-led
lead and zinc prices. To learn more about the exceptional opportunity in Silvercorp Inc., direct your web browser to silvercorpmetals.com, ticker symbol SVM in the U.S. and Canada. Remember to treat your portfolio with a core position in Silvercorp Metals.
Goldseek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.